Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here is your host of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Millennial Dentist. We got a special guest that I'm excited to have on the show, Jonathan Van Horn. Tell us a little about yourself, what you do.
Hey, man. Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on. I am a weird dude that likes to do taxes. I'm one of those CPAs that does tax returns for people all over the country. I also host a podcast called Start Your Dental Practice, where we have about 75 episodes out there right now of...
Dude, that's awesome. 75 episodes.
Yeah, 75. It's time.
We just want to be like you.
It's so much. It's so many.
I read some statistic that like most podcasts don't make it past like the first like 10 episodes. So.
Oh, yeah. I completely believe that 100%.
You're still out on us. Hopefully we make it.
It's a labor of love. That's for sure. You know, for me, it was easy. I mean, for me, it was, you know, as a dental CPA, we actually started the company as being like an outsourced CFO company for dental practices. So basically, we told the docs, like, hey, if you've got something that's got a dollar sign in front of it, we'll get in there and help you optimize it and do better with it. And so we lived inside, like the first year of my business, we actually were inside of dental practices every day, not here in my, you know, cozy office in West Little Rock, Arkansas, but we were actually out in dental practices, hanging out in offices, trying to figure things out, talking to people, looking at processes and things like that. And what we were doing was, if we didn't know the answer, we couldn't figure it out through our own research, is we just call up consultants that we had heard about or met or had worked in another office or something like that. So we were just networking with people trying to figure out answers for our clients. And sometimes the people would just give us the answers and, you know, say, well, they have you looked at this, and we'd look at that, and we'd then say, okay, well, this is what you need to do. Here's a person. Hey, doc, here's a person that specializes in this if you want someone to come and optimize it for you. And so we were having these conversations with people. Like literally one day I was just like, you know, we stopped doing that outsource service. We scaled back to a more traditional dental CPA firm. But we, you know, still had those conversations with people. We're still searching for answers for people. And like, I'm a nerd, so I was looking at all the dental business stuff.
How did you get into dentistry to begin with? I mean, obviously the CPA thing, but how did you get into the dental world of it?
Yeah. And you know, kind of goes hand in hand, but to kind of finish that thought, I was having these calls anyways. And so basically my podcast just turned into phone calls I was having with people.
Gotcha.
And so that's
like, why don't I record this?
Yeah, exactly. I'm enjoying it, so I'm sure everyone else would too. And so that's how our podcast kind of came to be. But as far as how we got into the dental world, yeah, I was managing a firm for another CPA firm here in Arkansas, and a tax return came across our desk. We'd had a dentist come in that was had been using a quote unquote dental CPA, and they paid a whole lot of money for the return, and it wasn't prepared that well. And I thought, you know, this was probably some fly by night type company that prepared this return. And I looked them up, and they had like 80 to 100 CPAs on staff. So like, for a reference point, like the biggest firm in the state of Arkansas has 100 CPAs on staff. So I was like, this is not a fly by night company. This is an actual like real business. And so that kind of opened our eyes to the industry of specializing in a niche. And we actually said, okay, we're not going to do what they're doing. We're not going to be CPAs. We're going to go and actually be these outsourced CFOs, which is another thing that's fairly popular in the corporate world. CFOs come in and do things like that. So we said, okay, we're going to be in a niche and we're going to be without CFOs. And we kind of evolved into what we are today based off of that. And we had, you know, dental clients and things like that. I don't know if there's probably any CPA out there that's a general CPA that does not have a dental client. So like, I get people all the time say like, my guy doesn't specialize in dentists, but he has a few clients that are dentists.
Sure.
Which, you know, speaking back to that terms, I don't know of anybody that doesn't have at least one dentist as a client.
So your company's called, what is it called?
Dentist Metrics is the name of the actual company. Yeah. We help people. We've got clients in about 20 states right now. We, you know, help people all over the country. A lot of fun.
So what do you think, what do you see is probably the biggest weak link in what, new graduates specifically struggle with as far as the numbers go and taxes and being in a practice?
Sure. It's just education. I mean, there's almost no educational points for you guys to be able to learn the things that need to be learned. I mean, there's no real courses in your schools. There's no real, unless you have like an undergrad degree. And even then, undergrad education for even if it's in business doesn't go very far.
Well, and my problem too is like I find like it's hard to find people who I can trust, you know, and that it's not just like, you know, I'm just another return on the desk, or you can spend a lot of money on like some of these different numbers companies and these companies that review practice statistics and that sort of thing. You know, it's kind of scary, I guess, is what my first kind of initial thought.
Yeah. So there's a ton of information out there, and being able to figure out like where to look and what to look for. There's a ton of sharks out there. I mean, there's a ton of snake oil salesmen, sharks, whatever you want to call them, just because like they, you know, 10 years ago, like a lot of this information was very heavily guarded, where you had to pay bunches of money to be able to become experienced in practice management type numbers. Nowadays, that veil's kind of been lifted. I mean, there's enough information out there. People give information enough now that you can find out most of this information on your own. Podcasts are a fantastic way to be able to receive that information. I mean, like I said, there's literally 75 hours of episodes out there on my podcast alone, and I'm one of like 40 dental podcasts, right? So like there's, if you take that, you know, there's, you know, hundreds of hours of content out there for you guys to be able to take on and to learn from experience from other people. You know, so that's the biggest thing, is just the education aspect is
in well,
the
and past, I do get annoyed at some of our generation for that, because sometimes we don't take the time. It's like that's kind of like my big soapbox, if you will, is like I'm kind of like, hey, you spent 8 years getting this degree, and you know, it's you can't be stupid to get it. You know, you can take the time to educate yourself enough to not, you know, and some people don't want to do it yourself. You know, some people don't like, they want a financial planner, a CPA, they want the whole nine yards, you know, and I'm like, that's fine. But I like to see people educate themselves enough to find the right people.
You have to have a foundation. I mean, it doesn't have to become one of your core competencies. You don't have to become an expert in it. You know, there's an old saying, you got to spend 10,000 hours doing something before you're going to become an expert. And so, you know, outsource as much information, leverage your own time as well as you can to other people and things that make sense. However, that doesn't mean that you're allowed to be ignorant to certain things. You need to have at least a core component of education, which is what, you know, our company is founded on, is like whenever I speak to new clients, I tell all of them, we take our role as educators very seriously, because we know that you guys don't have enough time to, you know, figure some of the stuff out on your own. We have practice owners that, you know, they're acquiring practices. They've never owned a business before and they don't know anything about owning a business, but they know that they're supposed to go and buy one. So we help, you know, educate our clients, you know, past that point of just, you know, not the typical CPA accounting role, you know, just doing slinging taxes and.
Well, yeah. And I want to get into that, because like, tell me, I guess, because obviously what y'all do is more than just, you're not just your typical CPA that does, I mean, obviously you do the taxes, you do that thing for clients, but like you do a lot more than that from what I've gathered. So kind of tell me and our listeners what does it look like to be a client of yours? How do you start? What are the questions? You know, kind of walk me through the process a little bit if you can.
But is it okay if we kind of start with what the typical relationship is?
I think that's a great idea. That's 75 podcasts right there versus like 6 podcasts.
No, it's fine. No, it's just that it gives a point of reference.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, and I've experienced that too. Like I said, I manage a firm. We had, you know, a few hundred small business clients. And so I've been a part of that world. And I kind of know both sides of it.
Sure.
So,
and most of us, you know, we graduate and all we've ever had is W-2s that, you know, it was easy. You could do it on TurboTax and like, there wasn't really much, you took the standard deduction and that was it. And all of a sudden now it's like, holy cow, you know, once you buy in, you have quarterly taxes and all this stuff. I have no idea what's happening. So it's kind of like a shock.
Yeah. So much stuff. Yeah. I mean, we could probably do 10 episodes on just random stuff that has to do with your CPA and what they do. But you know, in a typical world, in the old world, you know, the old world back in, you know, ancient times in the early 2000s, we CPAs, typical would be you would acquire a practice, you talk to a CPA, assuming they're not a dental CPA, And they'd help you acquire, they'd help you figure out what type of entity you're going to be. They'd help you figure out, you know, what type of payroll places you're supposed to register to. Maybe they might refer you to a payroll company to do that.
Yeah. I was going to say, this is good so far.
Yeah. And then, after that, you'll have an in-house bookkeeper do all of your bookkeeping. And then at the end of every month, if you're lucky, they'll send the books over to the checkbook and the statement of deposits over to the CPA, who would then clean up the bookkeeping on their end. If you're lucky, this is actually like the better of the relationships. And then they can look at your income throughout the year and help you project. At the end of the year, they clean up your books, they prepare a tax return for you, and they tell you how much you owe in taxes. That was actually, you know, on the scale of like 1 to 10 of the traditional CPA model, it's actually like a 7 or 8 in level of service. If, you know, most of the ones that we would see that are older firms, the way they would go would be you would acquire the practice, they would do your payroll for you, but they would tell you what they've seen other practices be as far as an entity goes. They wouldn't even say like, you know, this is why.
Good for your state or not your state or yeah.
We just saw a dentist do this one time. So it's what's best for you, regardless of revenue, regardless of profitability, regardless of, you know, a million other factors. And then after that, you don't hear from them until tax season. At the end, you know, January, February, somewhere in that range, they send you an email saying, hey, we need your stuff to do your tax return. You'd send them your bookkeeping that was done for the year. They clean it up on their end. They prepare a tax return. They tell you how much the taxes do. And that's it. That's all it is.
Which is like the one thing that, like, when I was looking for, you know, kind of trying to figure this out, like, that's the one thing I didn't want, right? Because, like, you don't want to – I've kind of heard it described as, like, you know, after the war's over, the CPA is, like, going around and they're just bayonet the wounded. It's just like, you know, giving it to, you know, like, this is – here you go. Thanks. And there's no sort of, like, planning or no sort of, like, really preparing throughout the year to help minimize that burden.
Precisely. And so – that, you know, that on that scale of 1 to 10, that's like a 3 or 4 at that point of like what you would see out in the wild. And you know, the amount you pay is varying. The firm that I talked about that I saw return past the books, they were a dental CPA firm, and they were in that 3 to 4 range of service level, and they were charging like 10 grand a year. So it was like, yeah, it's a ton of money. Which, you know, I, you know, like I said, the return wasn't that well prepared. I'm not going to name any names.
Right, Gang Waters? Is this Gang Waters?
I'm not going to name any names. Okay. And the, so the return never, you know, they, and that's how it would go, is you wouldn't know anything about it. It would just be, you'd be another number. And that's with not, that's not, you know, dental CPAs on average are like in that 8 to 9 category that I was talking about. That was just a one-off of something that happened. And like I said, it was a big firm. So maybe it was somebody, just the person they had was not good in that firm. But nowadays it's different. I mean, even like I said, I was joking about the, you know, the arcane days of the early 2000s, and things have changed a lot in the accountant CPA relationship based off of technology, like what things we can do now. Like, there was no way to be able to give that level of service 10 years ago and charge, you know, a fair fee. If we were to be doing what we do now for every one of our clients, you know, 10, maybe even 5 to 10 years ago, we probably have to charge 2 or 3 times what we charge now, just because we would have to be using so much more, we'd be more reliant on manpower than we would be on technology. So that being said, that's kind of the traditional way things go. You don't hear from them until tax season. You know, they look at your return. You might have a meeting with them to talk about like things you could do next year, maybe. And that was really it.
My thought to that is if a listener is one of those people, that's kind of the people you want to avoid. Like, if that's how you've been treated up to this point with your taxes and your accounting, like there's better service out there.
So there's a ton of risk involved with having that relationship. Whenever you send stuff over to the CPA, like I just got a client on who they have someone that is a dental specific, not dental specific, they're medical specific. I don't understand how they can be medical specific, but I guess they're just service.
Basically, they just want rich doctors. What it sounds like.
I guess so. I don't know, but they were telling us things that, you know, that the CPA hasn't asked them a question in 6 years, which is impossible to have a well-prepared return to not have a question asked in 6 years. Basically, they say they send the QuickBooks over at the end of the year, and the return just shows up, and they let them know how much money they're going to owe. And so that's, you know, that is asking for errors and omissions from tax preparation that could either is either going to one, create penalties and interest on, you know, errors in your favor, or two, it's going to be, you're going to be paying more in taxes than what you should be. That is going to just really hurt you in the long term. I mean, just even, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 a year in taxes over the course of a lifetime can be, you know, with, if you think about the time value of money and, you know, what the opportunity cost where that money could be, it could be hundreds of thousands of dollars. So that being said, we take a different approach. We are very hands-on with our clients. Like I said, we feel like we are educators because we have so many clients that have never owned a business before and they need the assistance with that. I spend a lot of my own personal time trying to become better at the business as evidenced by, you know, like I said, 75 podcast episodes. And that's, you know, probably every hour I have of that, I probably have 2 or 3 hours of research or other conversations with people, and, you know, as well as conversations with other dentists and things like that. So we, you know, the way that we treat the relationship is it's a year long engagement. I mean, we don't even charge for tax returns. We don't even charge for preparing the tax returns just because it's just a monthly consulting cost to us. You also typically, whenever you have a traditional CPA, you pay hourly for that work. Right. So, like, you know, and
then you don't want to call them, you don't want to email them.
Yeah. And the CPA client relationship, communication is paramount. If we're not communicating, we're not doing our job well. And if we're charging for our, you know, hourly time, like that's just asking for one side of that communication to be poor. Because it literally dissuades you from calling us. Yeah. And so, you know, for our clients, we don't do that. We have, you know, unlimited access by email and phone to all of us, everyone in my firm. And so anyway, I don't want it to sound like, you know, we're pitching. I'm just saying what opportunities you can have.
No.
So,
yeah. What it looks on the other side, the grass can be greener.
Yeah. And so, and we charge comparably to other firms and things like that for everything that we do. Bookkeeping and things like that. There's no reason for you guys to do that in-house. We can do that so quick now.
Which is funny. So I bought half my dad's practice at the beginning of the year. And that's like, one of the first things we did was we got on ADP for payroll. Cause I was like, he was still writing checks every pay period. I was like, I'm not doing this. Like, this is ridiculous. This can be done easier. Plus, and then on the, you know, when it comes end of year time and that sort of thing, it's a lot easier than having it. And then, but the second thing he hadn't given up yet is all the bookkeeping stuff. I mean, you know, he's still wanting to use Quicken for Mac and reconcile it every morning. And then the best part about it is like, we're paying everything off promotional credit card now so he can get points. And so he wants me to like print off the, every time I pay it, I print it off and give it to him so he can input it in. And I'm like, you realize if we use QuickBooks, this would all automatically come in and sort, and like, you could still even look at it, but it is really funny how just, you know, sometimes the older generations are not as wanting to just jump all in, let go of that.
Yeah. It's very par for the course. And so, you know, and that also asks for errors to be made because, you know, we're not all accountants. Not all of us can do a good job of entering things in. QuickBooks is a great accounting software for most accountants. I find that it's not really great for most non-accountants to use just because there are a lot of opportunities to make errors inside of it. So we actually refer to a different accounting software, but that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. So, but anyway, yeah, that's kind of how we help people. But really, you know, as far as, you know, the way that people can educate themselves on these types of things, really just under, you know, Dental Towns are still a great resource. There's still a lot of people that talk about acquisitions and things like that, practice management numbers. And, you know, to be honest with you, whenever we started the company, that's where we looked for a lot of our stuff, to try and figure out, you know, how to optimize things. And that was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago at this point. But we, you know, it's still a really good resource to educate yourself. You know, a lot of people don't really, you know, they just don't understand kind of the way the numbers flow. And a lot of people think that, you know, the numbers are kind of a you know, if we change one thing, our numbers are going to change based off of that. And that's typically not the case. Typically, you really have to look at the whole picture. You have to look at the people that are behind those numbers. And it's really easy to change numbers. It's really hard to change people's actions. And so, you know, if you don't go and get the education on the numbers and things like that, and again, taxes, accounting, all that kind of stuff, that is compliance based. Taxes and accounting are 100% compliance based. You do taxes because of the fact that you don't want to go to jail. You do accounting so that you can make sure that your taxes are well prepared. Making money in a dental practice is business. That's not accounting. That's not taxes. Accounting is the literal sorting of the transactions that goes in and out of the bank account and the credit card accounts. However, it is not what is it's, you know, Warren Buffett once said that, you know, accounting is the language of business. And so, you know, if you can read the financial statements, you can decipher what's going on in the history of that practice and well as read the story of that practice. However, in order to be able to get to that level of education and maturity, it's very difficult to get to that level and be able to decipher what's going on in a balance sheet, you know, profit and loss or statement of cash flows. So, you know, that's another thing that we work on a lot with our clients is our reports. You know, while we do have those traditional reports, we also have other reports that show, you know, like, what is our actual cash profitability? Because your income tax basis of cash or income tax basis of profitability will never be your cash base profitability because you don't get to write off your loan payments. Your income tax basis of accounting profitability will never be equal to your cash profitability because you're going to have things like depreciation and amortization. You're going to have loan payments. You're going to have distributions. You're going to have owner's pay. You're going to have all these things that come through that are not, you know, you're going to have assets that you purchase. You're going to have, you know, capitalized items. You know, there's so many things that go into it that are either on the balance sheet or they're on the profit and loss or they're on, they show something on the statement of cash flows. And it's just, it's all Greek unless you have a very high level of sophistication of reading those financials. So we spend a lot of time, you know, on our end, putting all that information into a context that the, that our clients can understand.
So you feel like you, like when you, like you come to these practices and then you're almost looking at more of like the analytics side of like the practice and trying to analyze the practice, I'm assuming compared to your other practices and whatnot, to just to find like them more opportunities to be more profitable.
Right. So we do compare practices to industry standards as well as other practices. A couple times a year, we'll take all of our clients and do a study of, you know, how well they're doing with their revenue compared to their expenses. So basically, when you look at overhead analysis, you're looking at, you're basically asking, you're trying to answer the question, how well did I spend my money? And whenever you're thinking about that, the answer to that, you're thinking of it in terms of relative to other people, basically. And that's what industry standard comes from. The problem is that a lot of industry standards are based off of, you know, these surveys that depend on people answering things truthfully as well as knowing how to answer things correctly. So we just use our internal numbers from all of our clients.
Well, and frankly, I don't, I always joke, I don't care what like the ADA average is because like that's counting a bunch of really crappy dentists. I want to be compared to like the elites, right? Or the people that are like the best of the best. And so it's like, well, if you look at that, that's not really a good comparison.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we base people off of revenue. We base people off of location and things like that as well. But
what do you find is the number one contributor to high overhead?
Low revenue.
I like that. So quit worried about their overhead and just start producing more is basically.
Usually. And that's usually that. I mean, there are obviously things you can do to fix overhead. You know, making sure that we're properly staffed, making sure that we're receiving competitive rates on our dental supplies and cost, aggressive, you know, negotiating those costs with vendors, et cetera.
Well, see, and that explains too why you have so many dentists in their 50s who, you know, now produce, you basically have a $300,000 practice, you know, who have stopped investing in technology, stopped putting money in it because they're just trying to like get as lean as they can. And therefore their production and their overall profits decreasing.
So, I mean, I tell people that, you know, we can instill some business processes and procedures into your practice to be able to lower your overhead just as a capital outlay out, you know, assuming no change in revenue. However, after a certain point, there are huge diminishing returns on what your efforts are going to be put forward towards. I mean, so rather than spending, you know, 50 hours a month trying to figure out how to lower your supply costs by 1%, which on $1 million practice is 10 grand a year in savings, why don't we try and figure out how to do one more crown a month? And then we can, you know, make, you know, an extra, and that, which of those is easier to do?
Well, and so that's kind of funny. So that's kind of my huge, you know, part of this whole podcast is me trying to, I guess, encourage more partnerships, more older doctor hiring young associates and transitioning that into potentially a partnership and then a phase out and a buyout and whatnot. Because what we've found in the past year and a half is basically that our overhead has dropped significantly because our income relative, or our income, but our production, by adding a dentist and adding a hygienist goes up so much more significantly. So even though dad may be producing less now, he's making more money. I mean, that's probably obvious to you. You're like, yeah, that's great to add.
In some cases that fails pretty heavily.
And but why is that? Why do you see that?
Typically, it's there's not enough patients to go around. The services that are being offered, that the patients aren't as willing as in some locations. The communication between the new doctor, associate doctor, or the old doctor is not strong. There's not good leadership. I mean, those aren't
barriers. That's not financial barriers. Those are other issues, right? Like financially, it makes sense.
Right. I mean, it can, as long as there's the patient base to be able to accept that. If you've got a doctor that's already doing implants and already doing ortho and extractions and whatever it is that they're doing, then you're bringing somebody in that can already do those things, it may not add to revenue if there's no capacity issue. Basically, at that point, it becomes a capacity issue. Is the current doctor already stretched as thin as they can based off of what they can do? And if we add in somebody new that can add new services, is that going to be an additional set of capacity, or is that going to be, a limiting factor? And if there's enough work to go around, then yeah, absolutely, the revenue is just going to go up because, you add, $700,000 a year in production and you're paying an associate $200,000, then obviously that's a pretty good mix whenever you've already got your overhead set as a certain amount, because you basically hire an extra assistant to do that, maybe an extra hygienist. And then you've got a few supplies here and there, maybe some extra equipment, which could be a loan payment or, a few $1,000s a month. And it can be, it can make total sense, but it has to be the right practice in order to do that. Or otherwise, I've seen a lot of practice owners add associates way too early. And I'm sure, a bunch of associates that are like, they'll say I got here and it's not near busy enough as what I thought it was going
to
be.
But my thing to that is, I think that's, I guess my point is, I think there's more opportunities out there than we let on to. And I think there's things that can be, I think a lot of those practices that fail could do things differently, right? Because the idea that that they're super saturated, the dentist does everything and he's not at capacity, I feel like that's fewer and farther between. I mean, do you see what I'm saying? I mean, even us, I mean, we're in an area where there's 20 dentists within a mile of us. And so there's tons of patients too. Right. There's tons of people. But I just think that I think it's more to do with them not getting along probably than, does that make sense?
Yeah, no, everyone is a creature of habit. And like one of the hardest things to do in this world is to change people and change behavior and change actions.
Do y'all do transitions?
We do acquisitions. Okay. So if we, if you've got people that have been doing the same thing the same way for 25 years, it's super hard to get them to change. While humans are, innately pretty good at, adapting and changing, a lot of people don't like to do that, especially when it comes to their work. Just because they want systemization, they want processes to keep them doing the same thing they were doing prior. Most employees come into a practice, they get the work done, they get done for the day, they say, okay, I'll see you tomorrow, they come back in tomorrow, they're just trying to get through the day, and that's all it is. If you change anything in their cog and their machine, then they're going to have a hissy fit most of the time. In dental practices, a lot of the times the owner is the person that is, or the dentist is the person that's working inside of the business, being the main gear in the whole business cycle, because they're generating 70% of the revenue off of one person's back. And so what happens is that the front office typically starts running the practice, the assistants run the schedule, and then the hygienist, yeah, they're just content. They become placid. They become, there's an old analogy of you put a frog into water in a pan. If you put that pan on an oven and the water's cold when they get in there, the frog will just sit there. And as the water starts turning up in heat, the water will still be content because it's in water, and they don't notice that the water's starting to get hotter and hotter and hotter. Eventually, water starts boiling and the frog dies because it just never left the pot. It never jumped out of the pot. So,
and that's a great analogy though for I think a lot of older dentists.
It's 100% correct. Yeah, that happens all the time. And so they just get content. And the tides change, things change in the environment, business environment. It becomes more competitive. There's more dentists that are around you. There are more expenses. Things, the reimbursement rates have not gone up. And it's just same thing. And people don't, they don't become more competitive. They don't spend more on marketing. They don't spend more on realizing that they are a medical service. And that since they're a medical service, that they have to have customer service that goes along with that. And so there's just a ton of things that go on with that. I mean,
or the fact that these you've treated these patients for so long, and then I hate seeing that. And I think it's a disservice to dentistry as a whole. And so anyways, that's my soapbox. Okay. But we'll get back to more numbers things. So talking about the overhead, talking about your analyzing, I mean, obviously what y'all do, tell me more about how you dealing with acquisitions. And I mean, do you work with younger doctors trying to find jobs, or I mean, can because we have tons of like dental students that listen to, I mean, can they, you know, if they find a job, do you kind of value practices for them, or what all do you do to that extent for on that side?
Yeah. So we 100% assist with the acquisition side. We do not do anything on the sell side, just because that's, you know, we typically, you know, we don't want to work with a selling doctor. And the reason being is that, you know, we're in it for the long haul. Like I said, we feel like we're educators. And so if we had a specialization within dentistry, it would be with the young doctors. I think like our average client age is, you know, in their mid 30s, early 30s. And the reason is because we're tech, like we're tech enabled.
Cause you're a millennial.
Well, yeah, I mean, 30, 34, 35.
You make the cut. You make the cut.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll say it. I think I'm actually in that other generation that's right before millennials.
Generation X. No, you're. When were you born?
82.
Yeah, you're probably close. But for the services of the podcast, we're going to say you are.
So I'm half and half. So I do have an accreditation, which is a specialization for CPAs of being accredited in business valuations. Which is basically the AICPA, which is the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, which is two CPAs, like what the ADA is to dentist. I have the ability to create valuations, do valuations, prepare them. But I'll say that, you know, I've probably done maybe one or two in the past couple of years. And the reason is because all my doctors that come in, I tell them, don't pay me to do a valuation. Have the seller pay to do the valuation, and I'll just look at it and give you my 2 cents. Because so many transitions fail that there's no reason for somebody to pay me, you know, 5 to 10 grand to do a full on valuation, which by my ethical guidelines has to be like 80 pages long. And I don't want to prepare a report like that. I just want to read somebody else's and tell you what I think about it. And so it's just a few hundred, you know, very minimal cost on that for my buyers. And, you know, that allows people to be able to receive the value of it, and me kind of talk to them about, you know, give a good purchase price, and you know what's fair, what's not fair. Problem with valuations is that they're a subjective number anyway. Like, you're putting a quantitative number on a qualitative value. A business is, you know, kind of qualitative in nature. And so at the end of the day, it just kind of comes down to like how much money are you going to make off of this practice compared to how much money are you putting into it. And then, you know, you base value based off of that most of the time. And so we look at the numbers, we help people. Some of them are just, you know, crazy whenever they come in. Some of them are not. And we probably look at somewhere around 2 or 3 a week probably to help people with. So we do it all the time, and I'm the only one in my company that does that. So that's all me. It's just because I like doing it. So.
Nice. Well, I think it's a good service, because when I was looking and I didn't know you, it was hard to find. I felt like someone to kind of help represent me that wasn't going to cost me an arm and a leg to, you know, or they didn't want me to, you know, so that's good to know.
And like I said, we're all about the long-term relationship. Like, we want people to be with us until, you know, until they stop doing dentistry. The only thing we do is that if someone uses us for that kind of service, then we do require them to be a client afterwards. So it's after the things go on. So, yeah.
And then, and I guess finally, what do y'all do? Because what I found too is that, like, you know, obviously we're seeing more and more people try to be like jack of all trades, you know, where they want to do everything. And I don't know if that's good or bad. But what do y'all do as far as because I think that I feel that one of the biggest roles that a CPA can help is minimize that tax burden is having a plan as far as retirement goes and what your options are there. Do you do anything with that, or do you kind of refer that to more the planning side, or what do y'all do kind of on the tax planning throughout the year and kind of dealing with that?
So it's obviously a case by case basis on the client. The one thing that I will say is that, the one thing I will say is that we have two goals in our tax department. The first is to make sure you pay the least amount of money in taxes as possible. And the second being that you don't have any surprises when tax time comes. So we're recording this in March 10th, which, the tax deadline is April 15th for, the vast majority of tax.
So we really appreciate you taking some time out of your busy day.
No problem. and we, our clients have known since November or December how much they're going to owe in a month. So we want them to know, within a reasonable amount of certainty, and be prepared for whenever time comes. And so that being said, we can't give that level of detail and analysis unless we are constantly talking to our clients about different things that are going on in their lives. In startup practices, in acquisitions, there are a lot of changes that happen over the course of the first few years that we have to be able to take a step back and say, okay, this is something that we need to be looking at this year. And when I say this year, I mean going forward, not in the rearview mirror. And we have to approach those things in those past retirement vehicles are definitely things that we look at what type, if we're going to be doing a simple IRA or if we're going to be a 401k or if we don't need to have anything to just be something on the outside. We look at those things from a tax perspective, but we don't look at anything from a wealth building perspective just because we're not financial planners. There are CPAs out there that do their own financial planning, but we typically refer that out to people that do that 100%. I'm not going to say that we'd never do something like that. I just feel like our focus is on helping people build a business, which is the biggest investment that they have. And that fuels all other investments. So our focus right now is on the business side of things, of making sure that business can, our doctors are well-educated, they're well-prepared, and they can understand that what's happening in their business from a business perspective, in addition to being, being able to be ahead of the clinical side of things.
No, that makes total sense. And I like how you said earlier on how you're kind of more of a CFO. You're not necessarily more of because I think every practice kind of needs a CFO to kind of help with that stuff. So, well, sweet, man. Well, thanks so much for, like I said, taking some time. And we'll have to do this again because I have lots more questions.
I have lots more answers, so that's perfect.
That's good. That's good. Because I'm probably one of the outliers. I love the numbers. I love the stuff. So I appreciate that you helped Dennis, and I think it's great. And I think that's an awesome niche. And I definitely would recommend you to people. So
thanks for
getting on. And everybody, remember to work smarter, not harder.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.